All right, so let's dive into some blockchain security today. Specifically, we're looking at this recent Bybit exploit. It's detailed in this Blockstream blog post. They analyze how a smart contract vulnerability led to like a pretty significant loss of funds. And we also have this tweet from Adam Back, Blockstream's co-founder. And it adds another layer to this whole discussion. He points out the difficulties even hardware wallets have with verifying Ethereum transactions. So what we're really going to unpack here, I think, is this inherent tension between the flexibility of smart contracts on Ethereum and then the security-focused simplicity of Bitcoin. Are these two approaches just fundamentally at odds?
Yeah, it's a question that's becoming, more and more critical as the value and complexity of these decentralized applications grow.
For sure. So let's break down this Bybit situation. It involved a multi-sig wallet, right? Could you walk us through what happened and where the security breakdown occurred?
So Bybit was using a multi-sig wallet, which in theory should require multiple authorized signatures to move any funds. The problem wasn't with the concept of multi-sig itself, but rather how it was implemented on Ethereum. They were using a custom smart contract, and that contract had a vulnerability.
Okay, so hold on. This is where it gets interesting to me. Bitcoin also has multi-sig, but it's handled very differently, right?
Exactly. Bitcoin has native opcodes specifically for multi-sig, like OP check multi-sig. These are built into the core protocol and have been battle-tested for years. There's minimal code involved, which inherently reduces the attack surface. Ethereum, on the other hand, relies on developers writing these complex multi-sig contracts from scratch every time.
So it's almost like Bitcoin has like a prefab, super secure vault door for multi-sig. Well, Ethereum is asking you to like design and build your own each time, and even the best locksmith can make a mistake.
Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy. And when you're talking about securing potentially millions of dollars, those mistakes can be very costly.
So this Bybit case, what was the actual flaw in the code? Was it something insanely complex?
It wasn't about the complexity of the code itself, but a more fundamental design issue. The vulnerability exploited what's known as a re-entrancy attack. Essentially, the attacker was able to call a function within the contract multiple times before the initial execution was complete, essentially draining funds with each call.
Wait, so the contract was tricked into giving out funds over and over before it could even realize what was happening? It sounds like a glitch in the Matrix or something.
It does sound like that, yeah. And it highlights the unique challenges of writing secure code in an environment like the EVM. Ethereum's a virtual machine.
All right, so this re-entrancy issue, is it a problem specific to this one contract? Or is it a broader concern with how Ethereum handles smart contracts in general?
This is where the design philosophy we were talking about earlier really comes into play. Ethereum's EVM is designed for flexibility, for handling a wide range of computations. It's like a general-purpose computer. But this flexibility can make security more difficult.
So the more you can do with it, the more ways there are to potentially mess it up or be messed with.
Exactly. And there are other security considerations on Ethereum that stem from this design beyond just re-entrancy.
Okay, let's hear it. What else should we be aware of?
Well, there's the issue of shared global state. Every contract operates within the same global state on Ethereum. So a bug in one contract, even a seemingly unrelated one, can potentially have cascading effects.
So it's like if one apartment in a building has faulty wiring, it could potentially cause a blackout for the entire building.
That's a good way to think about it. And then you have the issue of gas constraints. Ethereum transactions have to fit within certain computational limits. And if a contract is poorly written or too complex, it can run out of gas and fail. This can lead to unintended consequences, especially when dealing with financial transactions.
So even if a contract is logically sound, if it's not optimized properly, it could just grind to a halt mid-transaction.
Exactly. And this brings us to another point of contrast with Bitcoin. Its scripting language is much more limited. But this limitation is, in a way, a feature. It forces developers to think within a narrower set of parameters, which can make security audits and verification much easier.
So Bitcoin is like a well-worn path through the woods, while Ethereum is more like venturing off trail into uncharted territory. Both have their appeals, but one is inherently safer than the other.
I like that analogy. And this is why, despite all the talk about smart contract innovation, Bitcoin remains the gold standard for security in the eyes of many.
Right, so Bitcoin has this built-in simplicity on its side. But the Blockstream blog post we have here also talks about how Bitcoin's multi-sig capabilities are still being improved, even with those native opcodes. They mentioned something called Musig. What's that all about?
Music is a fascinating development. It addresses some of the limitations of traditional Bitcoin multisig, particularly around privacy and efficiency. Essentially, it allows multiple parties to produce a single combined signature for a transaction, making it indistinguishable from a regular single signature transaction.
So it's like taking multiple keys and somehow forging them into a single key that unlocks the same door.
That's a good visualization. It simplifies the process and also enhances privacy because an outside observer can't tell that multiple parties were involved.
That's pretty slick. So even though Bitcoin's multisig is already considered very secure, there's still this drive to make it even better, more streamlined.
Exactly. And that's something I find really compelling about the Bitcoin development community. There's this constant push to refine and improve, even on the most fundamental aspects.
Speaking of improvements, we have that Adam Back tweet to consider. He raised concerns about hardware wallets and Ethereum transactions. How does that tie into this whole security discussion?
This gets to a really crucial point about user experience and the limitations of current tools. Hardware wallets are fantastic for security because they keep your private keys offline, but they're not designed to handle the complexity of Ethereum smart contracts.
So you're saying even with a hardware wallet, there's still a level of trust involved when interacting with Ethereum dApps. You're trusting the interface to accurately represent what you're signing, right?
Absolutely. And that's precisely what went wrong in the Bybit exploit. The attackers managed to manipulate the interface, essentially tricking users into signing a malicious transaction that their hardware wallet couldn't independently verify.
Okay, so this isn't just theoretical. The complexity of Ethereum can create real-world vulnerabilities, even when using JOLs specifically designed for security.
Right, and this brings us back to that fundamental question. Can a platform that prioritizes flexibility like Ethereum ever achieve the same level of robust security as a system like Bitcoin that's built on simplicity?
It almost feels like two different philosophies clashing. And it's interesting because you would think that with all the brilliant minds working on Ethereum, someone would crack this security nut by now.
Well, it's not for lack of trying. There are several approaches to improving security on Ethereum, but each one comes with its own set of trade-offs.
All right. I'm all ears. Yeah. Let's hear about these approaches.
One option is to go the centralized route and have a single key manage the multisig setup. This is simple to implement, but it defeats the whole purpose of multisig as it introduces a single point of failure.
Right. That kind of takes us back to square one.
Yeah.
What else is out there?
Another approach is multi-party computation, or MPC. This is where you split the private key into multiple parts and distribute them among different parties.
That sounds way more complex.
It is, and it requires specialized libraries and a lot of computational overhead. But it can be effective in reducing the risk of a single point of failure.
Okay, and what's the most common way to handle multisig on Ethereum right now?
The most prevalent but also the most criticized method is using custom smart contracts for multisig.
So the same method that got Bybit into trouble.
Exactly. And the issue, as we've discussed, is that these custom contracts can be complex, difficult to audit, and susceptible to bugs and vulnerabilities.
So it's like we're stuck in this loop. The platform that allows for these amazing innovations is also the one most vulnerable to these types of exploits.
It's a paradox for sure. And this is where I think Adam Back's tweet is so insightful. He's not just pointing out a problem. He's highlighting a fundamental challenge with Ethereum's design philosophy. It's great to have all this flexibility, but if you can't secure it, what's the point?
Yeah, it's like building a high-performance race car without any brakes. Sure, it can go fast, but you're one wrong turn away from disaster.
That's a powerful way to put it, and it underscores the importance of thinking about security from the very beginning, not as an afterthought.
So given all this, where does this leave us? Is there a path forward that balances innovation with security?
That's the million-dollar question. It's interesting to note that Blockstream, in their blog post, highlights their work on something called the simplicity language. It's being developed for use on Liquid, a Bitcoin sidechain.
Okay, simplicity, I remember seeing that mentioned. How does that fit into this discussion?
Simplicity is fascinating because it attempts to offer a higher level scripting language than Bitcoin currently has, which could enable more complex applications, but with a laser focus on security.
So it's trying to bridge the gap between Bitcoin's simplicity and Ethereum's flexibility, but without sacrificing security.
In a way, yes. Simplicity is designed to be formally verifiable, which means that the code can be mathematically proven to be correct.
That sounds like a game changer. If you can actually prove that a piece of code is secure, that removes a huge amount of risk.
Exactly. And simplicity goes even further. It supports advanced features like covenants, which allow you to place restrictions on how Bitcoin can be spent, and custom SIASH types, which give developers more control over transaction signing.
So you're saying it's possible to have both the robust security of Bitcoin and the ability to build more complex applications. That's a pretty big deal.
It is. It's still early days for simplicity, but it represents a very different approach to smart contract development, one that prioritizes security from the ground up.
Okay, so back to Ethereum for a moment. They can't just ignore this security problem, right? What are some of the things being done to address these vulnerabilities?
There's a lot of work being done on different fronts. One area of focus is on improving developer tools and practices, things like better testing frameworks, static analysis tools, and formal verification methods are becoming more prevalent.
So giving developers better tools to catch those errors before they make it into production, that makes sense.
Exactly. There's also a lot of research happening around alternative execution environments and languages that could potentially offer better security guarantees than the current EVM.
So kind of like what Simplicity is doing for Bitcoin, but for Ethereum.
Yes. There are projects like EWASM, which aims to replace the EVM with a more secure and efficient execution environment.
Interesting. And what about on the user side? Are there any things users can do to protect themselves from these vulnerabilities?
Absolutely. One crucial thing is to be very careful about which dApps you interact with, do your research, look for projects that have been audited by reputable security firms, and be wary of anything that seems too good to be true.
So due diligence is key. Don't just blindly trust any flashy nude app that promises you the moon.
Exactly. Another important step is to use a hardware wallet whenever possible. Even if it can't fully verify all the complexities of an Ethereum transaction, it's still an extra layer of protection for your private keys.
And even with a hardware wallet, you still need to double check everything before signing a transaction. Make sure the interface isn't trying to pull a fast one on you.
That's a great point. Being an informed user is one of the best defenses against these types of attacks.
All right, so we've covered a lot of ground here. We've talked about the specifics of the Bybit exploit, the fundamental differences between Bitcoin and Ethereum's approaches to security, the challenges of using hardware wallets in a complex smart contract environment, and even some of the promising developments like Simplicity.
It's been a deep dive for sure.
What's the main takeaway you want our listeners to walk away with from all of this?
I think the key takeaway is that blockchain security is a complex and constantly evolving landscape. There's no silver bullet, no one-size-fits-all solution.
So it's not as simple as saying one blockchain is inherently better than the other?
Exactly. Each platform has its strengths and weaknesses, and the best choice depends on the specific use case, risk tolerance, and desired level of functionality.
It's about being aware of the trade-offs, understanding the potential risks, and choosing the right tool for the job. And perhaps the biggest takeaway is that we as users and developers need to be constantly learning and adapting as this technology evolves.
Couldn't agree more. This space moves so fast and complacency can be costly.
Before we wrap up, the Blockstream Post did touch on some of their own work in the Bitcoin and Liquid space. They mentioned Blockstream Jade, Blockstream Green, Core Lightning, and Elements. Can you give us a quick rundown of those?
Sure. Blockstream is heavily involved in developing tools and infrastructure for Bitcoin and its related technologies. Blockstream Jade is their hardware wallet. It's designed for both Bitcoin and Liquid. Blockstream Green is a multi-platform software wallet focusing on ease of use and security.
So they're tackling both the hardware and software sides of things.
Exactly. Then you have Core Lightning, which is their implementation of the Lightning Network, a protocol that allows for faster and cheaper Bitcoin transactions.
Yeah, Lightning is really starting to gain traction, isn't it?
It is. And Blockstream is playing a key role in its development and adoption. Finally, there's Elements, an open source platform for creating sidechains. Liquid, the sidechain where Simplicity is being developed, is built on Elements.
So they're really covering a lot of bases.
Yeah.
From core infrastructure to user-facing tools.
It seems like their overall strategy is to build a robust and secure ecosystem around Bitcoin, expanding its capabilities without compromising its core principles.
Yeah, that's a fascinating approach. And it'll be interesting to see how these different pieces fit together in the long run.
Definitely. It raises a lot of questions about the future of blockchain development.
Okay, so we've dissected this Bybit exploit, compared and contrasted Bitcoin and Ethereum's security philosophies, and even touched on some potential paths forward. But I want to leave our listeners with something to really ponder, you know, a final thought that might spark some further exploration. What's your parting shot for them today?
Well, we've talked about the strengths and weaknesses of both Bitcoin and Ethereum. But what if the future isn't about choosing one over the other? What if the real breakthrough lies in finding a way to combine the best of both worlds? The security of Bitcoin with the flexibility of Ethereum. Could we see a blockchain that offers the expressive power of smart contracts without sacrificing the robustness of Bitcoin's design?
That's a really thought-provoking question. Is it even possible? Or are these two approaches fundamentally incompatible?
I don't have the answer. And I don't think anyone does at this point. But that's the beauty of this space. It's still so early, and there's so much room for innovation and exploration.
It's like we're standing at the edge of a vast, uncharted territory. And it's up to us to discover what's out there.
Exactly. And who knows, maybe one of our listeners will be the one to make that next groundbreaking discovery.
That's a perfect note to end on. To all our listeners out there, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep. Until next time, stay curious.